Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance, neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling, to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and with the grain markets going crazy, who am I going to bring in? Well, old crazy Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of grains at Sisson's Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, it's just, battening down the hatches, right? That's what you're supposed to say when it's storming pretty good. So we've got a good old winter blast going on. The wind's blowing like crazy, but I guess that's just about everywhere in the United States right now. So misery loves company.
Yeah, it does. And we've got grains have decided that you and I were right and that they're just going up. What do you think about all this action?
Oh, it's been fun. It has definitely been one of those things. I was commenting to a customer of mine the other day that my life is 9 months of preparation, followed by, 3 months of intense work, but it's never 3 months in a row. It's like 3 days, and then you wait, and then three more days, and you just pray that you're caught up. So last week was a really good one for us. We saw the wheat market rally 37 cents or so. Bean market was up big, and the November beans had kind of sold out. They're charging on a little bit here as we start the week, and corn was up big. So we were able to trigger a bunch of open orders that we had in place and got to write a lot of contracts and work on building that marketing plan further. So it's always a fun time in my office to be able to do stuff like that.
So what do you think caused this rally? I mean, I know what I think, but I want to hear what your opinion is. What do you think caused this big rally?
I think it's a combination. I mean, you have the outside market influences. So the conversation about inflationary pressure is continuing to build. What's going on with the outside markets, the spillover of money into the economy and the consequences thereof of what that is, which we've been waiting to see, any sort of inflation develop for 5, 6, 7, almost 10 years now. 2008, that was the giant concern that we had, of course, when it came to introducing the spending programs that we were introducing and the economic strategies that we were looking at. So you have that. I think that's partly come to fruition, a little bit of money flow. You've got the concern over what's going on in Argentina, which is something that can't necessarily be ignored. I mean, you've got the country's private group, or their USDA, so to speak, putting the Argentinian soybean crop at 3% good to excellent, 21% good. So, 75% of their bean crop is in port of very poor condition, their corn crop struggling. And then you've got the southern plains, the dry conditions there. I mean, you've got reports right now that the wheat crop down there isn't going to yield any better than 2011 numbers, which were exceptionally low and could have a lot of impact on the overall supply and demand. So I think you had kind of a perfect storm, so to speak. A bit of a weather market, like I said, in South America and the southern plains, combined with some money flow and desire to be out of short positions by the funds, because that was no longer going to pay. And so here we are. Of course, we're ignoring some of the Brazilian chatter and things like that, but it's been enough to push us higher and allow farmers the opportunity to be selling some of their crops that they need to be selling.
So does it continue? What are you seeing going forward?
Honestly, I feel like right now soybeans are to a certain extent, ignoring gravity. You know what I mean? The Argentina crop is huge, that loss. I mean, not the crop itself. I mean, there's a discussion there that we're losing, I think we're 13 million metric ton below where we were a year ago. So that's a reasonable amount of bushels. Let me pull up exactly what that is. But, you know, it's a reasonable amount of bushels to be offset. You know, you're looking at 500 million bushel lower than last year. And, you know, some reports are that we're 367 million bushels lower than current USDA estimates. You know, to put that into comparison or to show apples to apples, you know, current expectations for U.S. carryouts 530. So, you know, some folks are saying, well, if you remove 367 million from global supply, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the reality is the Argentinian farmer has been holding on to his soybeans for several years because of tax strategies that the government has put in place, you know, 35% tax on whole bean exports. So Argentina has been a great producer of byproducts, soybean meal and oil. They're responsible for 47-49% of meal and oil exports into the world market. So that's where you've seen the significant rally happen in meal and oil. The fact is, though, is that we only have so much crush capacity in the United States. So I think eventually we kind of catch on to the fact that just because you have a production hiccup in Argentina, you know, for one, it doesn't prevent them from potentially importing beans, you know, maybe from Brazil. You know, as I mentioned, the Brazilian bean crop does look to be, at this point, a new record. So last year they were 114 million metric tons. You know, this conversation now, it could be 118, 119, 120 million metric tons. So is your net sum of the overall global market still zero? It could be. You know, not to mention the fact that $10.45 November soybeans are still going to encourage some increases in planted acres. So you're looking at, you know, the potential of instead of 90 million, like we were talking about before, which could result in a 700 million bushel carryout, you know, the potential is there to be 92 million or more acres planted. And that could put us into 800 million bushel territory at the end of next year. I'm not, you know, a fortune teller. I have no idea what the world's going to bring us as we go forward. But to me, I think, like I said, beans are kind of defying gravity at this point. And eventually the sellers will probably re-enter into the market. Maybe that takes until Argentina's harvest starts and we get a feel for what we're actually looking at yield-wise. But I would definitely, you know, at this point, it would be covering my risk to the downside in soybeans if I were a farmer.
Well, and that's really wouldn't you be covering your wouldn't you be covering your downside risk and everything right now?
To a certain extent, you know, I think corn has some upside potential still. I mean, we've got, you know, the biggest concern I have right now is there's two very pressing issues that could be potentially damaging to the corn fundamental outlook going forward. You know, what's going on with the RFS and the conversation that we're having with the RINs cap and you know, Ted Cruz and all of that. It does appear at this point we could see, I laugh because a friend of mine said it, we just need a win-win, you know, like a win-win compromise. And so there is talk that, you know, we could see a cap to RINs, but we could also see the RVP waiver that we need, which would facilitate the more plentiful or more abundant usage of E15. So that could potentially add another 3 to 5% of, you know, ethanol blend demand into the domestic market, which would be very supportive. However, if we were to lose that compromise and see the RINs capped and changes made to the RFS that were not supportive for farmers, that's concerning. And then, you know, what we have going on with NAFTA right now remains concerning. Both of those are probably headline risks, meaning that as time plays out, you know, they're not going to be a huge limiting factor to corn demand in general. But they are the things that are, you know, your 500-pound gorilla in the room. Other than that, I think corn could have some potential upside, another 20, 25, 30 cents.
Hold that thought, because we got to talk about NAFTA and where you think it's going. We're with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horwitz. Make sure you download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm. Never miss a day. We're trying to get to our goal of 1 million downloads a month. So you gotta press those buttons and get there. And of course, don't forget to get Bubba's daily update, which is available to you free. All you have to do is go to bubbatrading.com and you can fill out the form. And every day after the market closes, I will send you what I saw during the day and what I expect to see tomorrow. We'll be back with Angie Setzer after the break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, and we're coming right back to you after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. You. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, Angie, so tell me about what you think. You said corn about another 20 or so cents higher. Also, you talked about NAFTA. Give me your views there, please.
Yeah. Well, there's just so many factors going on in corn right now. So it definitely makes it hard to pin down as to what would happen. But we did see, you know, to start the week, President Trump came out and said that Canada is treating farmers unfairly, which in the dairy industry, I could see why folks would say that. You know, Canada functions under a quota policy, so there aren't more cows than there aren't more cows producing milk than milk demand. You know what I mean? So Canada has a very you could call it antiquated system when it comes to milk production, and it is allowed for their farmers to remain somewhat successful and isolated from maybe outside market moves. You know, for right now in the U.S., the dairy industry is struggling, you know, significantly. We saw a giant production boom take place due to the push higher in exports. A couple years ago, we had a significant increase in milk exports, whether it was dry or butter or whatever it may be, you know, into China and other places, because some other countries had some production issues that since went away. You know, of course, the market equilibrium, you know, kind of came back into play. So there's been a significant problem in the U.S. dairy market in general. You know, and so some folks will say, yeah, Canada's been incredibly unfair to our dairy farmers. You know, there was an issue here not so long ago on the changes in Canadian milk classes, which limited what had been a loophole for U.S. exports into Canada when it came to a certain type of milk. And so there was a lot of gnashing of teeth and things like that in the Minnesota-Wisconsin dairy market because they had kind of grown dependent upon this export into Canada. It got a lot of attention. It got a lot of people up in arms, one of which being the Trump administration. So there's just been this continuing beating of the drum that, you know, the Canadian dairy farmers is mistreating the U.S. dairy farmer, which isn't necessarily the case. I work in Michigan, and obviously we have a really wide open trade policy with Ontario. We have a lot of back and forth. Some of the best people I work with are from Canada. We do a lot of arbitrage. You know, maybe they sell some wheat into one of the wheat mills locally, and I end up delivering for them and things like that. And so on the corn side of things, you know, we've seen this conversation come about in Canada and Mexico. Are two of our largest corn customers, and Canada and Mexico, of course, are the ones wide open to the idea that if we were to withdraw from NAFTA, we would see some significant consequences come from export demand. Like I said, I think a lot of it's headline risk. I think eventually we find a way to get through it. You know, we did prior to NAFTA coming into play. Your customs paperwork says that it's a product, you know, maybe you run it through a roller mill once or something, and it becomes a ta-da, new product. It's not number two corn, it's something else, you know, but you know, there's always that concern that if we were to remove that free trade sort of banner over our heads, that we would see some problems with agricultural exports. And it's something to be aware of. Obviously, the market's not overly concerned with it right now because we've seen, you know, buying interest kind of trump that concern. But it's definitely something that we're watching. And you know, every day, maybe I'm over doing it, or maybe I am too concerned about it. I don't know. But every day I wake up, you know, worried that I'm going to see a tweet saying that we're withdrawing from NAFTA. And as a result, you know, a lot of my farmers that had a certain marketing plan put in place are left with their eggs in finding their basket that they had their eggs in has a hole in it or something, you know, just because that, like I said, that headline risk could take 20, 30 cents out of this market quickly. But it's something that we have to watch and something that we have to be aware of. But as of this point, you know, obviously the market's not overly concerned about it, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think that ties into a lot of things. I mean, you know, we didn't benefit, the markets didn't benefit from the lower dollar. In fact, now the dollar's rallying, the markets are rallying. So don't you think a lot of that's already priced in? And don't you think that even if we do pull from NAFTA, there's going to be something else will be worked out and we're not going to lose that business totally? I mean, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I think, and that goes back to the headline risk. You know what I mean? So to me, headline risk means that the market reacts quickly and in a short-term, ugly manner. And so for those that have to make decisions in that short term when the market's reacting ugly, you know, think back to to Brexit. You know what I mean? Remember what happened after Britain voted to leave the European Union? Everything collapsed. But, you know, all you could hear about was how terrible it was going to be and how life as we knew it in the world was over. Well, obviously, we're almost 2 years removed from that. I mean, even commodities collapsed when that vote took place. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that can cause short-term pain that long-term don't mean a whole lot. And NAFTA could be one of those things. I mean, I can't even tell you, NAFTA was obviously in place because it was passed or put in place in the 90s. And so I was trading grain in 2007 or 8, and we were selling a bunch of corn into Canada, and we had put a tariff in place on some sort of rubber or something like that. We had come out and we had done something, and Canada came back and put a retaliatory tariff in place on corn. And so to put together our customs paperwork, we had to put in that it was a something different, or that, you know, the Canadian group was responsible for the tariff. It lasted for all of 3 months. You know what I mean? It was a pain in the neck while we did it. It was a short-term problem. Long-term, it resolved itself and we moved on. You know, I can't even tell you, like I said, I think it was a rubber tariff or something of that nature that we had put in place, and they had come back and retaliated by saying our corn was going to have X amount of tariffs placed upon it. You know, so we've been there before. Even with NAFTA, I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't have some trade disputes here or there. You know, it's nice not to rock the boat in commodities. You know, obviously, when you're already in a bear market anyway, you don't need another reason to be bearish, because, you know, the old adage, bull needs to be fed every day, the bear can hibernate. So the last thing you need to do is give the bear any more fuel, you know. But reality is, overall, will it matter long term? You know, probably not. And a lot of it will depend upon what happens with South American production, or, you know, production in the Black Sea region, you know, overall. And if prices fall, then that's definitely not going to encourage any sort of production expansion, you know, elsewhere.
So, I mean, you know, there's X amount of available food, or, you know, corn and grains. And, you know, I know we've talked many times that there's enough, an ample supply. But, you know, I think that when you look at the bigger picture, I mean, the markets always know what's going to happen, basically. I mean, they've got it priced in, and I'm not sure what way they've priced it in yet, because I don't know about all these tariffs and things. What do you think of the new tariffs and things that we're talking about now?
Yeah, obviously, like I said, the market's not overly concerned about them. You know, I have not spent much time focusing on what tariffs meant in the past, which a lot of people have. You know, oh, the last time we had this happened, you know, the last time we did this, this happened. Obviously, to me, we're in a new world, you know, and that's what, when I was talking about soybean carryout outlook before, and I said we could creep up towards 800 million metric tons. You know, last week I tweeted something about LDP, loan deficiency payments. The last time that we saw soybean carryout at 800 million bushels, the cash price for soybeans in my area was $4.30-some cents. You know what so here we're sitting right now staring the potential of an 800 million bushel carryout in the face a year from now. We're looking at the highest carryout seen since the 06-07 crop year at 530 million bushel, and we're trading double the price that we were the last time we had that happen. So obviously we're in a new world. You know what I mean? So I really can't say what these tariffs mean or what they may mean long term. I don't know if they even stay in place for longer than a month, you know. And so it's one of those things that you just have to take your best knowledge of perhaps what you'd experienced before, what you anticipate to happen ahead of time or in the future, and go from there.
Well, that's a mouthful, and this is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, and of course, this is the Bubba Show, and we want to remind you about our high school investing program, and you know, we supply right now over 300 high schools, and are looking to get all of them, but we are looking for some help. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/BubbaTrading, that's patreon.com/BubbaTrading, and you can go ahead and make a donation. If you do, you'll get a free week of my futures advisory service, and also, don't forget to download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm, and you won't be disappointed. You'll get to hear Angie all the time. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be back with more from Angie Setzer after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Sisson's Elevator. And don't forget the tweeter at goddess of grains on Twitter. All right, so we've got a whole bunch of stuff going on. And of course, you know, the markets have picked up. And I believe that there's a lot more room to the upside. And I also believe that if we coordinate this with a equity market sell-off, we'll get even more push to the upside. But I go back to the original question. There are ways you can protect to the downside without giving up the upside potential. So wouldn't it be a smart time to at least lock in some of these prices where they are?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's been the push that I've had. And you know, there was a conversation that I had actually with my former boss a week ago, about 1040 November soybean futures or 1030 or whatever they may be. And a lot of my customers that ask me my opinion and follow the market strategy that I put together are 40-50% sold on expected production, new crop expected production, most of which using HTA only, you know, a hedge to a ride futures only. So it's similar to having a hedge in place, and we'll deal with basis and spreads later on or something like that. And he said, oh, God, I don't know if I gamble, you know, quite on being that aggressive. And I said, you know, in reality, if you're locking in profit as a farmer, the only thing you're gambling on are the bushels that are unsold, you know, plain and simple. You know, we've had this conversation before. Guys are going out, they're taking $1 million of operating loans and putting a crop in the ground and, you know, hoping that the price will be better at harvest time than what it is when they plant it, or hoping that the price will be as good. You know, I've got customers right now that have made the decision, not necessarily something I would advise at all, but because of the bean price and the profitability that they're looking at, revenue per acre on beans versus net revenue per acre on corn, they're going to go and be really aggressive on their bean acres. Perhaps 90% of their overall acreage is going to be soybeans. You know, these are folks that need to make sure that they're locking in their bottom somehow. You know, for me personally, I believe that, of course, crop insurance helps a little bit. You know, there's some out there that will push using put options to cover the downside. So I do say that, you know, your time value erodes, and it's not really a known value that you're locking in, though you are locking in some of that downside coverage with puts. You know, but to have futures locked in and know that, you know, no matter what the board does, they have $10.40 futures in place, I don't think is a bad thing. You know, I talked to a customer today about being 50% sold at 1040, and I said, okay, so in worst case scenario, the board goes to $9, your average is still 950 futures, you know, and that's still a profitable value on the rest of your crop. And so, yeah, I mean, it's right now it's one of those things where you definitely don't want to get overly aggressive, because there's still the door open to a production issue in the U.S. or a production issue on that farm in particular, to where you can go from saying, okay, I'm expecting 48 bushel the acre. Oh, crud, I'm producing 35. You know, that's always a risk that farmers face. But, you know, you want to definitely have a floor in place to where you're covered, especially if you're going out and spending a significant amount of money to put that crop in the ground. It definitely makes sense to guarantee yourself some profit on those acres.
Right, but I mean, like I said, you can actually, there are trades you can do that actually you don't have to give up and sell the future or sell a call and buy a put. I mean, you can actually just, you know, do some kind of ratio spread underneath it, knowing that, you know, hey, if it keeps going up, I'm going to make 99 cents out of the dollar instead of a dollar, but at least I'm going to keep making money and I'm going to get to participate, because there is the potential that this could turn into a big market, is there not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing with the commodity markets that I love so much, especially for a physical producer, is this market has come up with a bajillion ways. I think that's a technical number, bajillion, to cover your risk, whether it is, you know, having a cash sale and covering the upside, or like you said, having a ratio or a spread strategy or some sort of option strategy put in place where you spend a small amount of money and are guaranteed. You know, min-max contracts are big, too, where you have your downside risk covered, but you also have, you know that you may be triggered on a certain upside price, but it's an upside price you can live with. And, you know, so there's a lot of things that you can put together and do, and it's definitely a time to have that done. And that's what, so I get so frustrated, because you hear so many people right now already talking about the idea that we could see 450 December corn. I'm not going to say that that's impossible or an unlikely thing or anything of that nature, because I don't know. No one knows. You know what I mean? The potential is always there. But I do know over the last 5 years, it has been a hell of a lot harder for me to try to figure out how to fix a marketing plan for a customer at $3.40 futures than it has been at $4 futures. You know, so I sit here and I look at the opportunities that are presenting themselves and know that my customers can be profitable. And so we're figuring out ways to put those, those marketing plans in place, to ensure that we're covered and that they aren't, you know, we aren't trying to figure out how to put lipstick on the pig if the market drops 75 cents or a buck or something of that nature.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, you can't, that's one of the things I talk about. You can't predict it, so you might as well protect it, because you can't predict it. But again, I do think there's a good chance for 450 or higher corn. I think we're going to go a lot higher. But again, that would be something that I'd say that's fine, but at least make sure you lock in, you know, $4 corn or whatever it happens to be. I think that's important. Yeah. And I think that's one of the bad habits that farmers and producers get into, is they forget about that they were worried about it when it was $3.40, and now that it's close to $4, they're not worried anymore. And of course, that's just the time you should say, hey, it's time for me to say, maybe I should make sure that I don't have to lock it in where I can't get out, but I should lock it in where I can at least protect part of this big rally we've just had, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree 100%. And I agree with you. I mean, there's a lot of signs pointing to the fact that we could move towards 450. But that doesn't mean, you know, like you said, that you aren't going to make sure that if we don't, there aren't ways to be covered. And unfortunately, a lot of farmers either feel it's too complicated or confusing or burdensome, you know, to educate themselves. They'll spend hours upon hours upon hours figuring out how to maximize or use variable rate technology and things of that nature. And you know, figuring out how to eke out an extra bushel or two per acre on you know, troubled ground. But when it comes to spending a little bit of extra time, when it comes to actually turning that production increase into cash flow increase, some of them shy away from it. So there, you know, therein lies the struggle. And you know, I think the hardest thing about marketing for anyone, or you know, figuring out when to sell a crop or how to cover a crop or anything like that, is you never know what's the right answer until sometimes it's months to a year to a couple of years, you know, later. Then all of a sudden you're like, well, I should have done this and I could have done that. And I always tell my customers, you can learn from your mistakes, but the next year is going to be different. And so that's the true struggle that we have is so many times guys want to nail the high and they don't realize that in order of trying, you know, while they're trying to be the best marketer simply by nailing the high, they're missing out on so much more money in other forms than what they're aware of.
Right, because you have to make sure, again, one of the keys in the world of trading and investing and all of it is you have to make sure you can protect from the downside and not put yourself in that position. You know, again, we want to be able to participate, but we don't want to gamble either. And I think that's one of the things that happens in these markets is, again, people forget how miserable they were when we were down at 340. And, you know, they become cavalier with their attitude, like, well, it's not going down again. And of course, you and I know the markets are never different. The markets always work the same way. The only question is from what price do they change, right?
Exactly. And that's, I call it hopium, you know. And I make the ongoing joke that, you know, most farmers that I work with now had their first hit of hopium in 2007 when corn was supposed to be $2 and it went to $5. You know, and they've been chasing the dang dragon ever since. Maybe it's a, you know, an unfortunate joke, you know, considering what's going on in the world today, but it's very real. And so a lot of times the customers that I work with, you know, they forget the despondency that they felt, you know, 60 cents ago or whatever, when the cash price was $3.15. I mean, legitimately this year, I have priced in the last 4 months, since harvest, since December, you know, I've priced corn at $3.15, and I just priced some corn today at $3.95, you know, for nearby movement each time, whether it was harvest movement at $3.15 or right now, you know, the first week of March, I'm able to get my customers $3.95 delivered into the local elevator or local ethanol plant. So, you know, it's been this huge spread in cash values, and anyone that's locking in the $3.95 right now out of all of those folks, there's several that don't even remember what it felt like to be trying to figure out how to get $3.15 to fit into their marketing plan. Some of which are lucky. They had bins and things like that, so they didn't have to worry about it. All they had to do was wait and see what would happen. Others weren't that fortunate. And, you know, some of them got lucky by putting it on basis and seeing what happened. But, you know, I've said it 1,000 times, and I'll say it 1,000 more. It's much easier for me to work with a customer who has a $4 sale in place with the board at $5 come harvest time than a customer who doesn't have enough sold at $4 and the board's at $3. Just because, you know, you can always capture more money when the market moves to the upside. You can't find new ways to increase or create money when the board moves to the downside. Unfortunately, you know, that's just an impossibility.
And that is the words according to the doctor of grains, the goddess of grains. That's Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains. This is an elevator. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm. And don't forget to get Bubba's daily update at bubbatrading.com. You get a fresh look at the markets each and every day after the market closes. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be back with more from Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, right after the break. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We're coming right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, Angie, so, you know, we've seen also, it looks to me like we've seen some bottoming action in the meats. I think that hogs have already bottomed, and I think that the cattle looks like it's bottoming here. I know that's not your A number one place, but I know you watch them, so what are you thinking?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually occasionally you'll do short stints, you know, the local news. They do an agribusiness update and stuff like that. And last week I had mentioned that hogs were, you know, really at a level on the April hogs, which is what you're looking at because it's got the most open interest on the front here. But they were really at a level that had been, you know, long-term support. So you look all the way back, unfortunately, had to go back to September to see where we had thought about, you know, prior to this more recent move to the upside. And you can see, you know, August, September time frame, the April hogs had really put in a strong bottom, you know, around that 65, 66 range. And we were within shouting distance of that. We were, like I said, at the lowest level that we've been at since September 1st, the second week of September there, 2017. So, you know, it is not overly surprising that we found some support and some buying interest. I mean, from an overall standpoint on hogs, I don't think anything has changed, you know, significantly. The struggle that you have with hogs that you will have for the rest of our lives, you know, anytime that you want to decide that you're going to trade pork, you know, welcome to the jungle. The thing with hogs is that you can replenish a supply cycle in 6 months. You know what I mean? From birth to ability to basically be in ready to be marketed, it doesn't take long at all. And so that's the struggle that you have, is that you see this significant upside move that we saw in hogs up to, you know, what, 80, it was, well, 77 on the first part of January there in the April, which they didn't move anywhere near as much as what the front month had. I think we broke 80 there. You know, that encouraged some significant increases in production, and therefore we have a supply, you know, a pipeline issue, blah, 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 and here we sit. So hogs are definitely one of those things that go back and forth. I do think you've seen, you know, that the bottom is put in with hogs. I don't know if we necessarily are going to trade back up anywhere near the levels that we traded there the first part of January, but I wouldn't be surprised to see us get back into that trading range we established, you know, October through the end of the year. So, you know, that went from, and I'm talking April prices, so your front month might be a little bit different, but, you know, around 70 to upwards of 75 or so. And so I would be surprised to see some more upside potential in hogs on that side. And, you know, the thing that's been really interesting in cattle is that feeders really haven't backed off. And for me, when it comes to cattle, and you know, there are a lot of smart people that trade cattle. I am not one of those people that would consider myself a smart person trading cattle. For one, I don't trade cattle. I just watch it. And for two, I don't know if I'd consider myself smart at all when it comes to cattle. But I always watch the cash market. The cash market is, you know, in grains, a lot of times futures lead cash. And that's what I always say, you know, grains, futures is the dominating factor. You know, they'll lead cash when it comes down to it. Your cash price is primarily reflecting upon what futures are doing in grains. In meats, cattle in particular, cash tends to lead futures. So the futures market trying to kind of separate itself from the cash market here a couple, 3 weeks ago, you know, it didn't last very long at all. And for good reason. I mean, you still saw feeders cash trade, you know, around 140 to 150, depending upon where you're at. And I'm talking cattle country. And then you saw, you know, fat cattle still trading cash-wise and upwards of, what, 126 here 10 days or so ago. So I think that the support remains in play when it comes to cattle overall. There is some concern, you know, of course, that we could see some of those retaliatory issues kind of develop in the beef market in particular, because we've been exploring that type of expansion, you know, beef export expansion. And so if we get into some of these trade wars, you know, you could see some issues there. But overall, I think meat demand stays pretty steady. You know, I've always said that you don't celebrate life's great accomplishments with chicken breast. You know, you buy yourself a steak. And, you know, so it's one of those things that I think once you get a taste of beef, you don't go back. It's just a matter of if our foreign buyers are buying U.S. beef for other. And I think that we produce the higher quality product in the world. And I think that'll help give us some support as we move ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we just, you know, we've seen, you know, prices, you know, fairly depressed, and, you know, we had some big moves and they came back down, and I think they came down to pretty good levels where, you know, I'd like to be, obviously I'm a buyer at these levels, and I think that they're very solid when you look at the bigger picture. And of course, everything ties back in my mind is if the equities start to fail a little bit, you bring in that new money from, you bring in new money from, you know, from the equities, because people are always looking to enhance their own yield, right?
Yeah. And I think that's a reasonable opinion to have or thought to have too, especially when you look back and in hogs in particular, we were at the support level, you know, and that tends to be my go-to when I'm looking at meats in particular. I think that their technicals have a lot more of an impact perhaps than what you may see on the grain side, maybe the similar impact. But to me, with meats, it always seems like you can always tell when you're getting down into that buy level. You know, in hogs, like I said a week ago, you could definitely tell that it was time to be paying attention to the long side, because that short play had obviously gotten itself squeezed out. And I think you see that outside money flow. I think that people know that the world is, the population is growing, and the easy, most obvious way to feed them is through, you know, meat-based protein. So I think that support remains in play, you know, as we move along. And it's always interesting to see, because there's this battle or this fight, you know, over, you know, what retail prices mean. You know, oh, well, we're getting too expensive on steak sort of deal. And, you know, maybe I'm a fortunate member of society, but I don't tend to price compare. If I want to buy a steak, you know, maybe I don't buy the New York strip. You know, maybe I just buy a lowly sirloin, but I'm still going to buy steak if I want steak for dinner.
Well, yeah, but you work hard. You deserve a steak. And I get it. Well, I mean, I get it, yeah. Right? I mean, it makes sense. But again, I don't think that, you know, I think that you're going to see higher prices. I think that if the economy is getting better. Now, again, let me ask you, we've talked about this before, but what are your general thoughts on the overall economy, in your opinion, the way you see it? You basically have almost two homes, Iowa and Michigan. So what are you seeing in those mm-hmm. two places?
Oh, it's two different worlds right now. It's the weirdest thing. Right now I'm watching Iowa repeat Michigan late 90s. You know what I mean? Or 90s overall. See, in Michigan, you know, we had this significant downturn in, you know, tax revenue in the late 80s going into the 90s because we saw that introduction in manufacturing, that significant decline in automobile manufacturing and things like that. You know what I mean? We've really grown in Michigan to rely on always having these sectors of industry, Flint, Detroit, you know, areas like that and areas surrounding. And so we built this kind of economy based on that. Now, fast forward 20 years, 25 years, and Iowa did that with agriculture. You know, $7 corn and $14, $15 soybeans created exorbitant wealth that a lot of farmers had never even experienced in their lives here in Iowa. Many multi-generational, so their costs were very low. I mean, here in Algona, the town we live in, we had a performing arts center built by a farmer. I mean, he had so much money that he basically bankrolled the performing arts center for the school.
And we're gonna have to cut that at the performing arts. And Angie Setzer, the performing artist, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Sisters Oliver. Thanks so much for being here. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Well, thanks for having me. We'll have to pick up the economy conversation here down the road.
We will do that on the next show. And this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, every age, everybody. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Take care.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.